21 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday morning, and that's our regular time to greet Dr. Don Clark. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments of Vigneron and based in Garden Valley, Texas, which is just a couple hundred miles from where the studio is here. Don, you're a neighbor. We couldn't say that. When I was up there with David in East Dakota, you were a long ways away, and now you're right next door.
Well, almost next door, yeah. Well, you have to drive about 3.5 hours to get here.
Well, that's
other
true.
Than that.
That's true. But it's a pleasant drive going through cotton fields and oil wells. Strange mix there, but between us and Don. And a few hills, and it is pretty country, Central Texas is. And David, you're up there in the snow belt still, aren't you? You're still
in
winter. Okay, well, yes. we think of you often, and when we think of you, we do this. See that? It's a gesture of defiance. It's of sympathy.
We usually use a little snickering going on.
Yeah. Yeah, just a little bit. Because I remember the way it was up there come February, come March, come the first couple of weeks in April, sometimes a week in May, too, when it really isn't spring yet. But
if you look at Minnesota in most maps, if you look for, there's a large blue, it's kind of like a peanut-shaped object.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Mille Lacs Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a number of fishermen who spent the night on Mille Lacs Lake, not intentionally.
Uh-oh.
The other night, because the snow was so deep, they couldn't get off the lake.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's not fresh snow that's been falling, but it's there's blizzard-like conditions. There's high winds.
Sure.
And it's blowing the snow and drifting, and I shoveled the sidewalk out twice.
Yeah, well, you want to hunker down on those and build yourself a snow cave, man. You know, like an igloo there and just spend the night. So we don't worry about that down here in Texas. So
reach for another log of wood.
In addition to being a Vigneron and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, Dr. Don is a biochemist, which is just one of the things that makes him so valuable to us on Tuesdays. And just so everybody knows, there's a huge library of podcasts, conversations with Don that stretch back now about 7 years. And we talk about things like faith and creation, the biblical creation story, evolution, and just about anything related to that. You'll find subjects in there that will help you understand the big picture. And the big picture is what we're after here. DNA is certainly a key part of that. And we have an article today from the New Scientist Daily, which talks about, well, Don, I've heard this compared to chimps. I've heard this compared to mice, because, you know, they're used. Never before have I heard this compared to yeast, however. But apparently yeast parallels us in a certain way, and it aids in DNA studies, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's just that we, in the two instances that you've mentioned, of course, we have the genome of the human DNA now, which is 3 billion base pairs, long. I mean, that's a lot of information packed into our tiny little cells. To imagine that our DNA could be that complex, and of course, it's broken down into the various chromosomes.
And
that's in
each cell of our body, isn't it?
In each cell, yes. We have that much DNA. In the study, really, in the article that we're talking about today, compares how many unknown. So in the DNA, you have these regions called genes, and genes then code for certain types of proteins. And proteins are pretty much the.
What does it mean when you say code for? What does that mean?
Well, a gene has the segments of the DNA. There's segments of our DNA and all the DNA, you know, in life there's a one to three correspondence between an amino acid and the codon on the DNA. So it takes three DNA base pairs bases to code for one particular amino acid.
So the code would mean that genome or gene responds to a certain amino acid when it detects it. Is that what that means? So it's paired with a certain amino acid.
Well, the gene is the DNA segment that completely codes for the protein. And it might even go for more than the protein. It gets really complex fast, but we'll keep it simple. So let's say you needed an instruction in order to bake a cake. So you pull out your cookbook, you turn to the page that says, you know, Dutch chocolate cake, and it's got some steps there on how to make that cake. So you start, you know, getting the ingredients. First, there's an ingredient list, so you get the ingredient list together. And then it says, well, you got to use so much of this and so much of that. And you have to put it together in this particular order, and don't forget to stir in between and kind of wait and do these other things. Well, that's a page or two in your cookbook. It's kind of like the gene. The gene, then, there's a start code to say, hey, you know, start copying this segment of the DNA because we need this particular protein. And so there's a start code, and then there's the code for the actual, protein. And so the code gets translated into an RNA segment, and then the RNA segment hooks up with other machinery within the cell called ribosomes. And it's the ribosomes that actually do the transcription from the DNA code, if you will, into the sequence of the protein.
So it not only contains information, but it reads it and then executes instructions.
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there in order to get that information out of the DNA, out of the nucleus of the cell, and into the cytoplasm, where all of this information is used to transfer into actual proteins. Now, what's so important about proteins? Well, proteins make up all the machinery in your cell, basically. So you've got you've heard of enzymes, and we've got pectinases, for example, these days that break up other proteins and tear them, you know, into little pieces. And used to have enzymes in your laundry detergent that would break up the soil and break up the goop on your clothes to help break it down a little bit better. So you got functional, you got enzymes that either tear down things or build things up. Mm-hmm. And they're highly specific, and they're little catalysts, basically, is what they are, and they catalyze certain chemical reactions, but they're extremely specific. Then you have globular proteins, and examples of that, for example, your hemoglobin in your blood cells. The hemoglobin, of course, we know, transports oxygen and carbon dioxide. So it transports oxygen to the cells, and it takes up the carbon dioxide that the cell is burning, and takes that to your lungs for exchange of oxygen again. Well, that's your hemoglobin is actually made up of four globular proteins with four active units in them that actually transports the oxygen and the CO2. And then you have such things as structural proteins. So structural proteins are like collagen, and it's connective tissue of your cells, and these are scaffolding in even inside the cell. We have a protein called actin. And without actin, our cells couldn't even divide. Without actin, you couldn't move a muscle, because muscles are made of actin, actinomycin, actin, proteins. And these are structural and functional proteins at the same time that link together and build little micro filaments, for example. And at the time of cell division, they are the proteins that are actually ripping your cells apart, so that it could be, that you could have two cells instead of one cell. That process is a very active process and requires energy, so there's ATP involved, and requires calcium and various other things in order to make this function. So now we get to this article, and this article says that, hey, You know, we know most of the genome. We know most of the genes that are in the genome, the genome of the yeast, but we don't know about 20%. We know that there's 20% of the genes in yeast, for example, that obviously code for protein because we can recognize the start and the stop signals in the genome, but we have absolutely no idea what those proteins do. We don't know if there's enzymes. Sometimes we can figure out that, oh, okay, this section of the protein looks like it might be an enzyme, but we don't know what the enzyme does, or it might be another type of structural protein. There's all kinds of proteins in our cells, and they have all kinds of functions.
Now is this the same matter that we referred to several times on our programs with you as junk DNA, or what used to be considered junk DNA because they didn't know what it does? Is that same category?
Well, no. What was referred to the junk DNA is all of the DNA, which is most of the DNA.
No.
and the higher you go in the food chain, if you will, the higher you go, the more sophisticated things are. For example, humans have a lot of used to be considered junk DNA. That's all of the region in between the genes.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of DNA there that doesn't code for anything, except that now we have found that is very much involved with turning on and off genes, with folding the DNA, with all kinds of control mechanisms, because if you had your genes being expressed, every gene in your DNA being expressed at one time, then there would be no differentiation of cells, for example. There would be, it would be, every cell in your body would be cancerous because it's producing all kinds of proteins that it doesn't need, at that time for mm-hmm. that particular type of cell. So, but we're only talking about the genes in the DNA, in the genome. And so they did this study on yeast because the yeast genome, for example, is smaller than the human genome. They found out that, we know 80% of what these genes do and what the proteins that they code for do, but we don't know about a fifth of them, 20%. And then they started looking at the human genome, and they said, the story is the same there. We don't know about 20% of the human, proteins or genes that code for these proteins. We don't know what these proteins do. Well, in the human genome, that represents 3,000 proteins. So you have 15,000 proteins is estimated in the human genome. That's a whole lot of proteins, and 3,000 not to know what they do, says to me that we're still a far cry from understanding even the human cell, understanding a yeast cell, much less a human cell and all the functionality that is in there.
Let me pass along just a couple of the paragraphs from the article, because this is New Scientist Daily, and if you follow the link, you may not get the complete article unless you subscribe. So I just want to read a couple of phrases to you. This talks about the mystery of the DNA. It says, when the team applied these criteria to yeast proteins, they found that the function of most of them were discovered in the 1990s, progress slowed in the 2000s, and plateaued in the 2010s, the teens here, with the function of a fifth still unknown. And then they describe the research method, which is interesting to me. It says, a common way to find out what protein-coding genes do is to mutate them in animals, such as mice and zebrafish, to see what happens. The mystery proteins don't show up in these screens, perhaps because they're involved in processes such as aging that have subtle effects. So what they do is they'll mutate a gene to see what characteristic changes or disappears, and then try to translate that knowledge to the human genome. Correct?
Well, translate that into, okay, this protein is involved in hair color, for example, or, you know, eye color or whatever, whatever it might be. But in this case, they've kind of run out of things, because when you mutate some of these mystery proteins, they don't seem to have an or a lack of expression, if you will, of whatever the characteristic of that protein, you know, does. In that, you know, is a number of reasons why that might be the case, because there might be, these might be controlling proteins. These might, you know, tell cells that, you know, I'm a liver cell and I'm not a kidney cell, for example. So if you mutate the gene, and you might have, you know, a kidney cell stop functioning as a kidney cell and start doing something else, which is much more subtle than having the kidney not work, you know, do its job.
Well, this may represent a lesson learned by scientists. There might have been a time when they would have looked at this and said, well, it's obviously unneeded, unnecessary. It's dysfunctional. It's obsolete. We've gotten past that. We don't need the function of these. But because they've discovered that junk DNA really isn't junk DNA, they're more reluctant to just cast this off, and so they're calling for more research. They're not willing to categorize it as obsolete or old DNA or junk.
Well, and I was surprised at that, because the evolutionary point of view is just that, where they would say, oh, these are proteins that no longer have any function within the cell, so of course we can't identify what they are, because they don't have any function, so they must be turned off all the time. And it's, you know, kind of latent in our evolutionary story. Well, of course, we know better than that. It's nonsense. Everything that is in the genome is there for a specific reason, and every protein that is coded by the genes, you know, in our genome is important in ways that, you know, we, as you know, 20% of these, we don't understand yet. Like I said, they could be involved in very, very specific turning on and turning off expression of certain, you know, whole segments of genes, for example, that might change you know, a kidney cell into a liver cell or something.
So one might say that in God's economy, nothing is wasted.
Oh, absolutely nothing is wasted. Because we don't understand it doesn't mean that, you know, it's junk. It just means that, you know, man hasn't gotten there yet. And instead of looking at this as, gee, you know, this is a sea of a mystery that, you know, is a challenge God has placed there as a challenge for us to marvel at his glorious works. And that's what all of this research should lead us to, is that, you know, how complex is the cell? How complex is living, you know, is life in general? We don't know why a cell should be alive in the first place, you know, and so it should lead us to the glory of God, as opposed to saying, you know, man knows everything, and we can figure these things out. Well, God did create us to be very creative folks, and he did create us with an intelligence to be able to start figuring some of these things out. But some of these mysteries, you know, can take lifetimes of work in order to be able to unravel the complexity that God has placed in these systems, because it required that complexity in order for us to be who we are.
And curiously, that may be one of the reasons that we don't understand this DNA. They talk about a lack of funding, or that the results of the research would take so long that no one's encouraged to do the research. And interesting factor at play here as we consider DNA and the marvel of creation. And, well, I'm not sure. Wait a second. Clear my voice here and get that voice back here. It's fascinating that science reveals the beauty and magnificence of God and his creation and the amazing detail of it, and yet doesn't lead science to the conclusion that he's real. Isn't it astounding?
I'm reminded, it seemed like only a couple of years ago that there were books being published that we only use 80% of our brain or 90% of our brain. And I said, well, what absolute nonsense. If it's there, it's got to have a purpose. Mm-hmm. It's not just taking space. it's not up there for balance. I mean, there's a reason for that other 80% to be there.
Well, for some of us, even ballast is useful, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I saw, books written by some consultant who was going to come out and redo your curriculum, and and he said, well, we only use 80% of our brain, I said, no, I don't know that. I said, that's nuts. That's craziness. He says, there's a reason for it to be there.
Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to make mention of their website. It's creationmoments.com, and there you will find libraries, reams, bundles, and videos and blogs and DVDs that support the biblical story of creation. And it's an amazing story, and it's scientific information that will build you up. creationmoments.com. And Don, we'll look forward to next Tuesday. Thanks very much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
You made a difficult subject even more amazing, and I don't know if we simplified it or not. And maybe it's best not to simplify it, because it's complexity that rivets our attention on it.
It's complex, but it doesn't mean that we can't understand at least some of it.
True.
From a global point of view.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Okay, you too. So long.